Kia ora and welcome to Outspoken. I'm Patrick O'Mara. The economy's been called many things, ranging from rock star to dairy dependent, but growth appears impressive compared with other developed nations. Now, estimates have the economy growing at an above trend rate of about 3.5%. It's created tens of thousands of jobs, its best showing in a decade, while wages have risen and confidence among business and consumers is high. People are voting with their feet too, with more New Zealanders electing to stay at home and an increasing number of foreigners flocking here in search of work. But other measures show the benefits of growth are not filtering through to all. Auckland and Christchurch have been the main beneficiaries of the upturn, with other regions like Northland and the Hawke's Bay struggling. Wage growth remains muted, with a sizeable minority receiving no pay rise in the last year. And housing costs have climbed, particularly for those at the bottom of income scales, leaving many struggling to make ends meet. And while the size of the problem is hotly debated, all sides agree much more can be done to address inequality and child poverty. So, can we say New Zealand's households are better off? Well, joining me to discuss that issue is the Director of Social Policy and Parliamentary Unit for the Salvation Army, Major Campbell Roberts. Burl's Chief Economist, Ganesh Nana, and the New Zealand's Initiative Executive Director, Oliver Hartwich. Well, thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
I thought what I might do just to start off is just get a brief description of what you would think better off means. And Oliver, can I start with you?
Better off generally means that we observe rising living standards, better education results, better housing outcomes for the population, better job opportunities, and I think we're probably seeing a mixture of that. Certainly on housing, I would wish greater improvements on housing affordability. We seem to be going in the opposite direction, of course. But I think, generally speaking, the economy is showing very good signs of life. It's been described, of course, early this year as a rockstar economy. I think with the correction in dairy prices, nobody would put it in these terms anymore. But I think, especially compared with the rest of the developed world, with Japan, with the Eurozone, New Zealand looks like a stellar performer still, and certainly compared to the Australians.
Major Roberts.
For me, better off, I think, means that the most vulnerable are actually progressing. And that's certainly not happening as far as I'm concerned at this stage in terms of the people that I'm seeing. What we're seeing is an increase in the number of people, for instance, who are coming for housing assistance. I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, that would have been perhaps around Auckland, 15 people a week. Now it's 40, 50 people a week. But it's not only in that area, it's in a number of areas. And I think the New Zealand economy is really two stories. It's the story of a group of people who are doing very well and a group of people who are not doing so well at all.
Ganesh?
I think better off, I'd measure better off in terms of are we in a place that enables us to take on the challenges that are going to hit New Zealand into the future. So it's more a future-looking perspective. And we can measure that across various spectrums, but I never subscribed to the rock star description. It was always transient, and even if we had a couple more years of that, it was still not enabling us to withstand the shocks into the future, or indeed put in place in New Zealand that is something that we can hand down to the next generation that we're proud of.
Just looking at the economy, 3.5%, that's above trend. We are creating tens of thousands of jobs, so more people are in work. We have wage rises, and maybe modest in most cases. I mean, is that your assessment of it? Is this actually still a better economy to be in?
It all depends on where you compare it from, and I think that's the critical thing. It depends on, are you comparing it to last year or the year before, or indeed are you comparing it to 10 years ago or 20 years ago? If you ask my parents, are they better off? They left me with everything. People of that generation will undoubtedly think that today is a lot better off than it was way back then, and I think that's rightly so. But you compare it to what we expected it to be a few years ago, and given the wins that New Zealand has had, and given the wind we've had in terms of dairy prices, in terms of our commodity prices, we should be riding way higher than we are at the moment. So you can look at it glass half full, glass half empty. The other comparison is, who are you talking about? And Campbell mentioned before, it's a two stories in terms of a group of people that are doing very well, but there are also a large group of people that aren't. So to suggest that we're all doing better off is not justified, but undoubtedly there are a few, and I'd probably say quite a large group, that are better off than they were this time last year. And feel so. And if you're in a job, if you have a house, then you're pretty much okay. But if you're without a job or you're renting, things look a little bit different, or actually a lot different.
Yeah, we'll pick up on some of that. But Oliver, I wanted to ask you, though, about the economy's been growing at 3.5%. Maybe it peaked at 4% at one stage. But it never really felt like that, though, did it? For large parts of New Zealand, it doesn't feel like the sort of growth spurts that we've seen in the past.
I'm not that sure that it doesn't quite feel like that, because you can definitely see people are voting with their feet. Just a couple of years ago, New Zealand lost about 40,000 people to Australia on average. Now I think it's almost balanced. So I think people instinctively feel that something is happening here and something is working better in New Zealand compared to Australia, so they're coming back now. So I think people are instinctively feeling that something is happening.
But whether it still feels... It may be true in places like Auckland or Christchurch, but say if you are in the Hawke's Bay or in Northland, that 4% growth hasn't filtered through to those people.
Because that these are the regions where we wouldn't have observed 4% growth, but these are the regions that have been characterized sometimes as zombie towns. And we have to really find solutions for places in New Zealand that are struggling, where we don't see the job opportunities, where the growth hasn't actually arrived yet. So I really wonder, back to your question, how does 3.5% growth really feel? And is it really a much more diverse picture anyway?
Sorry, could I just jump in? I think it's a question about how you measure that 3.5%, or is it just that one measure? And also, do we actually feel good just because everybody else looks so bad? When you're talking about Australia or you're talking about Europe, yes, they are bad, but does that necessarily mean we are doing the right things here in New Zealand, or we are just the outlier through accidents of history and everything else? It feels like we're doing better, but in reality it's just because everybody else is just doing so much worse.
Sorry, Oliver.
I think we should qualify this a little bit. Of course, there are some effects that nobody could really take credit for. The earthquakes you mentioned and the rebuild that follows. High dairy prices, again, largely out of our control. But there are some things, of course, that New Zealand has done that have actually made it more competitive over time. So, for example, this government has actually improved welfare numbers, for example, by actually putting in place welfare reforms that actually help people to get back into the labour market. We've had a government that has actually kept a very close focus on returning the budget back to surplus. So I think on some of these issues, you can see that there are some deliberate policy interventions that are probably bearing fruit now. So part of it, yes, accidental. We're just benefiting from an international dairy boom, which is probably now slightly fading. But other things, I think, are just a result of deliberate policy making.
Okay. We'll get
I guess I'd want to challenge that, though, in a sense, because there's, since 2007 and 2014, it's actually 16% more people on benefits in New Zealand. If you take a comparison over the last 5 years, you've got an increase in the number of people out of work. So, again, I think...
But those numbers have improved in the last couple of years.
They have improved in the last couple of years, but again, it does. It's a bit of where do you start taking the figures from? And it's, I guess what we're trying to say is, are we better off overall? And I think it's definitely a situation of two stories, because it's not only sort of rich and poor within the cities, but it's also the cities as against the regions. It's the young who are not doing so well as the elderly are doing. Pacific migrants are not doing as well as Asian migrants. There's a whole host of things which are different in New Zealand. And so some of the old measures, I think, or the old ways in which we look at things are not sufficient going forward.
If we looked at just, say, something like housing, for example, and that's obviously been a big issue during the election, and the government has made some real pledges to try and improve that, or at least speed up the building of houses. You're in Auckland. I mean, that must be an issue which creates quite a lot of resonance for people that you're dealing with, housing and housing costs.
Absolutely. I mean, we're just overwhelmed with people in terms of housing. And the difficulty is that the government, yes, has signaled change, but what we do know about housing is it takes a long time to bring about that change. And the Ministerial Advisory Group 5 years ago identified clearly some changes which would be beneficial. most of those changes are yet not in place. And although we've done such things as special housing zones, the reality is now that the cost of land is going up in those zones as they're seen attractive places to invest. So there's no guarantee that some of the things that are actually on the ground now are actually going to work in the long term and going to make things different.
Well, Oliver, you've obviously, the New Zealand Initiative, have some thoughts on this matter and some recommendations. I mean, you're saying that this tends to be about trying to clear out whatever red tape that's in the way there, but also allow cities to expand.
Yes, and I think it is necessary first and foremost to recognise that we've got a housing crisis. I think it's sometimes played down a little bit by politicians who say, well, this is just a challenge, it's not too serious and it will all level out. But I think we have to really recognise that this country has not been building the houses that we really need for decades. So the question then has to be, how do we increase housing output? And I think it comes down to just a very few simple factors. One is that we have to make it far easier for local councils to afford extra infrastructure. Currently, that's what's holding house building back, because infrastructure is costly. Councils have to provide it. We have to make it easier for councils to be able to afford extra development. And then I think it's the red tape. So we're talking about a reform of the RMA, the Resource Management Act, and I think it is absolutely necessary. We're currently trying, I think, the 18th reform of that particular act in 23 years. Perhaps, given that history, it's time to start from scratch and think again.
Will that, though, help, which I'm sure is Campbell's big issue, is that will it be affordable enough for those people who need the housing, particularly cheap housing?
Yes, supply is the one thing we need to change if we are concerned about affordable housing, because you can't really do much about demand. The people that we are concerned about are already here. They are constituting demand. Unless you want to deport them to reduce demand, you have to deal with it and take it as a given. So I think if you really want to crack that housing problem, you can only crack it on the supply side.
I agree with Oliver, this is a crisis. My issue or my concern is that we are, as we do for most New Zealand crises, is we put it in a silo. We look at the housing crisis from the New Zealand-wide perspective and try and put a one solution across all New Zealand, when bluntly, it's a problem that's facing Auckland. We haven't got a housing crisis in other parts of New Zealand. And from a broader economic perspective, I would actually like to ask, does it make sense that we continue to allow Auckland to expand even further and literally sprawl? I thought we had that model of development. I thought we kicked that out the door in the 1960s. And we're going back to that development. That's the solution to our housing problem at the moment that's been put up. Let's allow Auckland to sprawl even more. Yes, we might get some houses. Yes, we might get some low-cost housing, affordable housing. But where will it be? It'll be in the periphery. Where will it be? It'll be far away from the jobs in the middle of Auckland. Where will it be? It will require even more expensive transport infrastructure. That's the solution that we're looking at, and that's going to take a long time. Let's look at that as one option, but there's got to be some other options, and I'll put it in the mix with our rural-urban problem that we've got in New Zealand. The provinces are struggling, a lot of it to do with the local government infrastructure that cannot be afforded, a lot of it got to do with where the jobs are. It's an economic solution. It's not just about building houses, it's about bringing a New Zealand economy that has a model around jobs and economic wealth being driven out of the regions, out of our export base, whether it's dairy, whether it's meat, whether it's kiwi fruit or wine. That doesn't come out of Auckland. That comes out of the regions. That's where we need the infrastructure. That's where we need to get the jobs in place, because the housing is already there. It's not an easy solution, and it's not going to happen in 5 years' time. But it's that broader picture, rather than putting housing in a silo, and we'll fix that with the RMA, and then we'll have another silo over here which says business growth agenda, and we'll leave that to MB, and then we'll have the environment and Department of Conservation looking after the rivers. All of those silos don't help unless someone's joining up the silos.
But are you saying that this is a case of regional development? And if so, I mean, couldn't we argue that we have been down this path before, and we've said that we don't think it works, trying to put jobs in particular places?
Because we've tried to put jobs in particular places without joining up the dots of all those other things that have to happen at the same time. We've got local government saying, oh, we've got to do an economic development strategy for their region. Well, that's fine, but where is the economic development strategy for the nation that the local areas can slot in? They've got to fit into that jigsaw puzzle. We haven't got that picture for the nation.
I think that's really important in terms of the fact that we've we do need to look wider than just looking at Auckland. And yes, there's been problems with regional development in the past, but I think we are in a new agenda, we are in a new environment. And in work that we're currently doing, some of those regional variations and the upswing that's taken place since the GFC, it isn't actually equal. I mean, some of those regional areas are suffering quite badly. And I think, as already been said, we have some of that infrastructure. I mean, we have empty houses in cities like Whanganui, and yet we're putting more and more people into Auckland. And so some of the answer to Auckland's housing crisis has got to be actually providing jobs elsewhere and moving some people from Auckland.
Well, Oliver, I mean, do you think that can be done?
It's very difficult to achieve that because in Auckland we are seeing, of course, agglomeration effects. We are seeing that Auckland survives and thrives as a city because it can actually provide the business clusters that are necessary to drive growth. So you couldn't just tell an Auckland law firm or a bank to just relocate to wherever, that simply won't work. I think we just have to recognize that Auckland has this demand, so we better deal with it. And if I just look at house prices in Auckland and I see that the typical land component of the typical Auckland family home is now 60%, then I think that this is a clear indication that we've got a supply problem for Auckland, which we have to solve in Auckland and we can't solve it anywhere else.
Can I just jump in there? You hit the nail on the head with agglomeration. Yes, that's fine, but you don't get the benefits of agglomeration if you allow Auckland to sprawl even further. So the answer is not around allowing even more land available for more houses. It's actually putting the houses in a different way within the current Auckland metropolis. Now, that's a different view of housing. It's a different model of housing. It requires a behaviour set in terms of the way New Zealanders live and perceive housing. That's a model I would go with totally. Yes, let's get the agglomeration benefits out of Auckland, but that means don't let Auckland sprawl even more.
Well, I think also realising that a lot of Auckland's growth is coming from external migration, and some of those people who are coming into Auckland could actually go somewhere else. I mean, you know, for instance, going down to Huntly or Narrawakia, you know, and actually commuting to Auckland, or in these, with the whole range of especially in technology jobs, they don't have to be living in Auckland. They could be living elsewhere.
Isn't going to be the problem, though, that you're going to have to convince people and firms to go there? I mean, this is still the issue at the end of the day.
Maybe the government needs to lead the way in here. I mean, do we have to have a naval base, for instance, in Devonport? Could we not have it in Whangarei and move that sort of infrastructure around? It does seem to me there are alternatives which, without becoming a sort of controlled economy where we're saying you must move here or must move there, I think there's certainly incentives that we can put in place.
I think incentives is a good key word, but I would like to see incentives that drive private development and private investment. I think we shouldn't really bank on the government to determine where development is going to take place in the future. So, for example, we have made the case that we should look more into mining, for example, which could actually help regions to prosper and thrive. But we then have to make it possible for councils, communities to actually capture some of the benefits and keep them locally rather than sending all the tax revenue out of mining to the centre.
Wages here in New Zealand are very, very low. Are we in the wrong industries or the wrong sectors if we want to talk about a high-wage economy?
I think if we want to have a higher-wage economy, we have to have better skills, we have to invest in education. That's the only chance we have in the 21st century global economy to justify higher wages, because we can see that we have more and more people added to the global workforce in developing countries, especially in Asia. And therefore, if we want to justify higher wages in the future, we can only do it if we've got the skills to actually match these higher wages.
Ganesh, well, just around that, around low wages, I mean, do you see this as a key problem in New Zealand and its development?
Short answer, yes. I mean, you hit the nail on the head again around skills and investment in education. That's critical, and we've got to look as a nation. Are we prepared to invest even more in education? But I think on top of that, add the sentence, are we then also prepared to wait for the returns to come out of that? Because investment in education takes a long time to come back. And you're talking about wages. We've got in New Zealand, essentially, de facto, a low-wage business model. Whether it's private sector or public sector, we've got in the mindset of New Zealanders that wages are a cost. And so therefore, look up in any economic textbook, the role of a business person is to minimise their costs. So is it any surprise that we have most New Zealand businesses built on a low-wage model? Until we can turn our mindset And until we can turn our behaviour into looking at wages as an investment in future skill development, we're going to continue down this path of looking at low wages as a cost and continue down a low-wage economy. And that's not bad in the sense that it does provide jobs, it does provide, does enable us to, enables a fair number of us to put food on the table, but is it the foundation for the next generation? And that's where I'm thinking maybe not, until we can turn our minds around to wages and indeed investment in education as an investment into the future.
Are we seeing some of that though? I mean, if we looked at ICT exports, for example, that rocketed. It was up 8% or something over the last year, despite the fact that we're very much focused on dairy prices in the primary sector. We, you know, part of that tyranny of distance which New Zealand has suffered from is being lost now with things, with the development of the internet, with the cloud. So we are, don't you think we are pushing there anyway?
We're pushing there, but we get a lot of these short-term indicators that look good and everybody latches onto them. It's not going to be that easy, and you're not going to see those benefits or those returns from that investment overnight, or indeed the next year, or indeed the next 5 years. What we need to embed in the system, in the mindset of businesses and indeed government and legislation, regulation, call it what you like, around encouraging high-skill, high-wage economy, encouraging high-skill, high-wage businesses to prosper. You're not going to get that if you continually have our leadership thinking that wages are a cost to business and need to be minimised.
Campbell, on that point, I mean, you deal with a lot of it low-income households. Is that, do you think that firms do treat these people badly? Do they see them as a cost rather than necessarily as an investment?
Oh, I'm sure they do. And what that means is that we're dealing increasingly with people who don't have permanent employment. They've got either cyclic employment or temporary employment. And on wages, we are having, throughout the country, having an increasing number of people who are coming for assistance who are employed. They're not beneficiaries, they're actually employed. And that's some indication, I think, of the low nature of those wages. And again, in terms of sort of regional development, you've got in areas like Waikato Bay of Plenty actually a falling off in terms of wages, 10% I think we saw. Those wages have gone down against the average. So you've got a significant thing happening there, and unless we do invest in that way, unless we do sort of make it worthwhile for people to go to work, then the incentives in fact are not there, and it's sometimes more costly to do that.
Well, I think you have to be realistic though. Wages will always be a cost. Businesses do not employ any employees, workers, just to keep them employed and pay them. They want to actually do business with these people. And therefore, I think if we are concerned about low wages, the only answer, the only chance we have to make that happen is to increase productivity, because then you can justify higher wages. So, and that brings us back to the whole skills agenda, to education. It's a long-term project. There is no quick fix, unfortunately. There are no silver bullets in that. Productivity in the long run is our best hope.
We've heard from Cameron Bagri, the chief economist of the ANZ. He actually thinks that one of the unsung stories of New Zealand has been, since 2009 at least, productivity gains. I suppose the question for a lot of people might be, when am I going to see more of these gains come into my pay packet?
Probably if this current trend persists for a bit longer, so that businesses feel more confident that they can afford it over the long run. Because I think we are still at the beginning of this process, and you can see what happens when an economy goes towards higher wages too quickly. Look at Australia. Australia has become completely uncompetitive. They're paying super high wages, and the result is actually job losses, massive job relocations from Australia to other countries in the region. So I think we wouldn't want to see that here, and I prefer a slower wage growth if it helps to reduce the unemployment problem. It's a trade-off.
When is this long-term going to arrive?
Well, I think it might actually arrive sooner than we think, but I think it is absolutely understandable that businesses do not trust this just after a couple of years, especially after the experience of the GFC, which was traumatic, of course, for many businesses.
But the problem is that that's not happening across the board. Mm. You are actually getting a wage growth in some areas of New Zealand and decrease in others.
Actually, wouldn't you expect that?
You would expect that there would be some variation, but at the same time, you wouldn't expect perhaps that be that same variation within the same industries, that you've got people at the top actually increasing quite significantly, people on the shop floor not actually sharing in those gains.
But again, that is an international story that we can see in many developed economies around the world. If you look at the US, for example, people on no qualifications in the US are not better off than they were in 1970 in real terms. The more qualifications you add a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD, and you can see that with every degree, with every bit of qualification and education added, you see more significant real wage increases over the decades. So I think we have to learn our lessons from that. And the lesson is really that if you want to justify premium wages, you have to have premium productivity. If you want to have premium productivity, you need premium education. It's as simple as that.
Can I throw one extra bit in there? And yes, productivity is reliant on the skills of the workforce, but also is reliant on the infrastructure that the workforce has to work with, whether that infrastructure is on the factory floor or on the business floor in terms of machinery, equipment, or the latest high-tech gadget, or whether it's the infrastructure in terms of the local region, in terms of the networks, the airport, the transport, or the country as a whole. And so to put it all on people in terms of being educated is fine, but if businesses are not also then prepared to do the investment in the R&D and marketing and the infrastructure, we're going to get caught up in that same problem. And that's my perspective again. Wages, yes, they're a cost to business. Yes, businesses have to pay out a wage. But if they perceive it as an investment in the future, just like staff training, just like buying the new machine or doing the research into the next market or the next product, then you actually have businesses and the workforce in the mindset of, yes, we're investing in the future development of the business, the region, or the country.
And that's absolutely true. And that's why I think we should be pursuing policies that will help us for the economy to increase our game and to increase our productivity. One of the ways in which we actually could increase productivity is to import different business practices from abroad. So I think actually encouraging foreign direct investment would help us in that regard, because where New Zealand typically ranks low in international comparisons is in business sophistication. If you want to import different business practices and if you want to learn from the best abroad, you have to invite these companies to invest here, bring their knowledge, bring their skills, bring their technology to New Zealand, apply it here. That would help us as an economy, of course, to lift our game, become more productive and actually pay better wages.
That's all we've got time for now. I've been talking with the Director of Social Policy for the Salvation Army, Major Campbell Roberts, Bill's Chief Economist, Ganesh Nana, and New Zealand Initiative's Executive Director, Oliver Hartwich. I'm Patrick O'Mara, and that's Outspoken.